in free market principles to save the free market system.
In a world of conventional confusion,
there will be time for them to make profits. Now's not that time.
Daddy, what do taxes pay for?
Oh, why everything. Policemen, trees, sunshine. And let's not forget the folks who just don't feel like working, God bless them.
Don't be afraid of your freedom.
Prepare to unshackle your mind.
An idea whose time has come cannot be stopped by any army or any government.
Your professor has arrived. Tom Woods. Beware, citizen. You are now departing from the world of allowable opinion. The Tom Woods Show.
Welcome, everybody. It's Thursday, May 8, 2014. Talking to Mike Church today. Talking about U.S. history. He's got a new CD set, Times That Try Men's Souls, about Washington's famous crossing of the Delaware, the whole story and background of that. So if you're a history buff, you're going to enjoy this program, and you're going to enjoy Mike's set. Before we get to Mike, a quick note about what's coming up. Tomorrow, we're talking to economist Chris Coyne about his book, Doing Bad by Doing Good, Why Humanitarian Action Fails. Very important stuff. Then on Monday, for those of you wondering, how do people compete and prosper in this new economy, where it seems like all the rules have changed? Well, I've got just the program for you. We're going to be joined by Charles Hugh Smith, who is the author of Get a Job, Build a Real Career, Defy a Bewildering Economy. Very important, very useful book with specific recommendations. We'll be talking to him on Monday. Remember also, you're helping us out here at the show by making your Amazon purchases through TomWoodsRadio.com, through our little Amazon widget there. So remember that little voice of conscience saying, gosh, this guy gives me such valuable information every day. I don't have to pay a cent for it, and I don't have to pay a cent extra when I make my Amazon purchases through his site. So I'll go to TomWoodsRadio.com and do that. And while you're at TomWoodsRadio.com, click on the links to subscribe to this program on iTunes or Stitcher so you don't miss any of these precious gems, including this conversation with Mike Church. Many of you know Mike. He's been a guest here in the past. He is the host of The Mike Church Show on Sirius XM on the Patriot Channel, channel 125, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern. If you're up that early, definitely tune in to Mike during your commute if you're not listening to the Tom Woods Show during your commute. Maybe you could listen to Mike on the way to work and listen to the Tom Woods Show on the way home. I can't imagine a better combination. Mike Church, welcome back to the program.
Hey, Tom. Great to be with you. Thank you.
So now you've got this Washington's Crossing CD set. It seems like you've got something new. Well, I don't know how often, but pretty darn regularly. You work as at least as hard as I do, it seems, and that's a scary thing. So let's talk about Washington's Crossing. First of all, it's a CD that's is it narrated or is it dramatically acted out? What are people going to hear on this CD?
Well, Washington's Crossing, Times That Try Men's Souls is a 2-CD set, and it is a it's more dramatically acted than it is narrated, but there is narration, and it's I do most of the narration. Well, I do about 2/3 of it, and my 17-year-old daughter Madison lends a helping hand, and she does the other third by asking questions that she probably knows the answers to, but she humors me and reads the script as she's supposed to. And what it is we start with the because this aired for the first time on Sirius XM on Christmas Day, which is the day that Washington crossed in 1776. So what it is, it starts as a basically me describing the famous Emanuel Leutz painting of Washington's crossing, and it's really dramatic, and you know how he crossed the Delaware, and the sun was peeking through the clouds, and he was standing up in a giant rowboat and all this stuff, and then we kind of end that with, yeah. My daughter said, that's a great story, Dad. And I said, that's only one problem. It never happened. And then the story kicks in from there to explore exactly what did happen. And more importantly, the events that led to Washington being on the Pennsylvania side of the Delaware River, which, to my knowledge, no one has dramatized yet. So that's what it is. It's a dramatic reenactment of what happened after the triumph of the Colonials or the Continentals chasing Admiral Howe out of Boston, and for the Port of Boston was seized, and the Brits occupied it and installed many of the things that we revolted against and then tried to guard against in our Constitution. And then to the campaign in New York, which most people don't know an awful lot about, and it's just really, the best way I can describe it is, as Washington described it, as the only way that he and that army survived that summer, fall, and early winter is through divine providence. And that's what it's the story of. It's just what they went through and just how miraculous it was that the Brits, I mean, they had them cornered time after time after time and just miraculously could not catch him. And that's what the story is about.
You know, Mike, in your press packet, it says that you originally conceived of this as a 30-minute special for Christmas Eve 2013, but as you got working on it, it just ballooned into this much larger project the more you looked into the story and saw how interesting it was. So what were the sorts of things that, as you were researching this, you said, well, I've got to include this, and I've got to include that, and I've got to include that, so that it became something grander than you conceived of at the beginning?
Well, I suppose that the principle, the main thing that I found was that I started reading or looking for source material like historians are supposed to, and trying to go to the first source. And all the stories that were written, well, most of the stories that were contemporary, that were written around the time of the conclusion of the Revolution or shortly thereafter, were short stories. And they would appear in little pamphlets that, were the early precursors to the big magazines that we have today. And just looking for a more fleshed-out version of the story, it was hard to find. So I just assumed when I started, like, well, this will be a quick read. I can just take one of these little short stories, do a little research on it, nail some of the important dates and names down, put it together, and bam-o. Well, then I picked up my old copy of David Hackett Fisher's Pulitzer Prize winner, Washington's Crossing, and you start thumbing through that 400-page dissertation on all the shit that happened, and I would probably have to make a mini-series out of it. And then for some reason, Tom, I still don't know why, just the Lord just kind of guided me here. I found a copy, and I started reading Washington Irving, the great author's, his Life of Washington bio. And as I started reading, I said, let me forward to the chapters that he has on the campaign of 76. And as soon as I started reading that, and I finished it all in about a day, it just occurred to me that Irving, because he wrote such great stories. I mean, he was such a great writer. Sleepy Hollow and all those little novelettes that he wrote. Irving's tale, unlike Hackett Fisher's, no knock on Hackett Fisher, but Irving's tale was exciting.
Yeah.
I mean, it was thrilling to read, and it was, had a lot of drama in it, and there was this intrigue going on with these guys trying to mutiny against Washington and conspiring to get him fired so they could take his command. And then the miraculous escapes and all that. And it was really, I just took Washington Irving's, the way he wove the tale, and kind of used that as my guide. And I give him full faith and credit in all the printed materials. And then used that as the basis. And there was no way you could tell that in 20 minutes. So I was able to get it down to about 2 hours, just a little over 2 hours. And that's how the expansion of it happened. So we can thank Sleepy Hollow Washington Irving, who was actually named for George Washington, for that.
Oh, how about that? Well, now, the crossing of the Delaware on Christmas Day that everybody knows about was actually the eighth crossing Washington's army executed in 1776. What can you tell us about the previous crossings? Not quite as glorious?
Well, maybe not quite as glorious, but certainly as miraculous. For example, the most famous of all is, so Washington mobilizes the Continental Army. He's got about 14,000 or so men. And they, from various parts of New York, they arrive. Some of them get to Long Island by leaving the mainland of New York up near New Rochelle and that part of New York City or New York area. Others have been stationed at Manhattan Island to kind of hold the fort down until Washington can get there, and they cross from there. And Washington himself, that's the route that he takes. So what we have here is all of July and early August, we have about 14,000 Continentals digging ditches and making ramparts and fortifying what is today Brooklyn, basically, for the assault that they think is coming from the British. And what they don't know when they find out is that the Brits have twice as many men as they thought they would bring, and they brought 10,000 Prussians or Hessian mercenaries with them. And when this battle begins, I mean, it's just one blunder after another. When the battle on Long Island begins, Washington, much to his chagrin, finds out that all his intelligence is fake. He's been duped. He also finds out that his men have failed to secure an entire half-mile-wide passage on their left flank. And, of course, Admiral Howe finds out about this. And as soon as the battle of Long Island begins, it's just about over. On the first day after the battle, Washington meets with his war council, or what's left of it, and they decide, look, we've got to try to retreat. Of course, how are we going to do that? These guys are more surrounded. They got 30,000 of them all around us. And about that time, the most amazing and miraculous storm comes off the Atlantic Ocean there, and it starts raining, and it becomes very misty. Impossible to hear the horses and cannon moving, and they also have the cover of darkness and the rain. So they get 9,000 of their men back across the river, the East River, that day, and then day breaks, and they still have about 2,000 or 3,000 left to go. And of course, they're thinking that, okay, the British see us now. They're going to realize that we tried to retreat. They have ships nearby. They're going to move in. They're going to surround us on Manhattan Island, and we're cooked. Well, about that time, in the middle of August, a fog arises right off the Hudson River, and you never get a fog in New York in August. A fog arises so thick that men couldn't see each other 3 yards away. And that covered the remaining troops so that they could get across the East River and seal the retreat. And later on that day, as soon as the fog lifted, the British went to go finish the conquest to find that Washington and his entire army had escaped back across the river. That's the most amazing of them. Then from there, he crosses Long Island to what we call like White Plains, New York today, and across the Harlem River. Then he has to cross the Hudson. Then he has to cross the Passaic. Then he has to cross the Hackensack. And it just, there's a series of retreats. He almost gets caught. Christmas Day, 1776, almost never happens, Tom. And we dramatize this in the Times of Try Men's Souls. And after he crosses the last river, before he gets to the, and that's the Passaic, before he gets to the Delaware, they stop, and he thinks that his other general, General Lee, is going to meet him. So he's waiting for Lee for reinforcements. And while he's waiting, he finds out that Lee has double-crossed him, and he's not going to meet him. But Cornwallis is going to meet him. Cornwallis. And so he gathers all the men that he can, and as speedily as he can, they try to get across the Delaware River on the 12th of December or so. And as they're in the middle of the river, the British Army shows up, and Washington's just looking back. And Cornwallis is just shaking his head going, missed it by that much again. So at each turn, or at each one of these crossings of those rivers in New Jersey, Lord Cornwallis almost caught George Washington. And the only reason he didn't catch him that day is because, for once, Washington's intelligence was good, and he knew that they were coming after him.
Mike, before we move on to another topic, tell people how they can get a copy of Times to Try Men's Souls.
Well, get a copy of Times to Try Men's Souls at MikeChurch.com in my Founders Trading Post, or at FoundingFatherFilms.com, which is a lot easier to remember, and it's right there on the front page. And, of course, at Amazon, all my movies are at Amazon.com, along with Spirit of 76 and all the other docudramas and documentary movies and audio series that we've produced.
Mike, I want you to tell us now about Mike Church Project number 8717, and that is the resurrection of some of the writings of John Taylor of Caroline. Now, before we go into that, I want you to tell people who he was and why we should care about him.
Well, John Taylor of Caroline County was one of those members of the generation of men that we call the Founding Fathers. And not many people know about Taylor of Caroline, and that's because he rarely held an elective office. and that's because he never sought any. And he was more of a behind the scenes kind of, okay, I'll provide you with all the intellectual firepower you need to combat the fake Federalists, John Adams and Alexander Hamilton and what have you, but I really have no desire to do any of the heavy lifting myself. He was one of the wealthier Virginians. His father-in-law had bequeathed to him or had granted to him upon marriage a very large expanse of property. He was probably the first agrarian writer of the North American, I don't want to say colonies because they were states then, but he was the first agrarian writer that actually sat down and said, okay, how can we make better crops? How can I grow better crops? How can I grow more? How can I utilize the land? How can I fertilize it better? And he wrote a book about this, and he was one of the first to market with that. And while he was doing all this, he was busy arguing Supreme Court cases. Like, for example, he argued a case against this thing called a carriage tax, and he was very, very good friends with Thomas Jefferson, very good friends with James Madison, although he never trusted Madison. But he was really lifelong friends with James Monroe. And until the day he died, he and Monroe were the best of friends. Although when Monroe was president, Taylor was kind of had the attitude that some of us have towards people that we know they get elected. Okay, man, that was great. I'm glad you got elected. Now, my turn to play watchdog. Don't think you're going to get a pass just because I know you. That's just a little bit of the background on Taylor.
Another reason Taylor might not be referred to a whole lot is that his views on the nature of the Union are a little bit unfashionable today. And I assume that's what you're highlighting in some of the works that you're bringing back for us.
Well, some of those views, now, they may not comport with what modern conservatives think how the Union ought to be constituted, but I think his view at the time was as accurate as anyone's could possibly be.
Oh, I agree completely, and I think his view at the time was obviously far, far more mainstream than it would be considered today, and it's quite
right.
Valuable, and he's a very penetrating thinker, and you can hardly go wrong reading him. What kinds of things are you, in fact, working on bringing back, and when is this project coming to fruition?
Okay, well, we've already restored one of the lost treasures from Taylor, and that is his argument respecting the constitutionality of the carriage tax. And in that pamphlet, now, what this is, Tom, is in 1794, the Congress gets together, and they want to see how far they can push their power to tax. Of course, the Federalists, Hamilton and Rufus King and that northeastern lot, they thought that their power to tax was pretty much bottomless. They could tax almost anything. Now, provided that it met with Article 1, Section 8 apportionment clauses. And so they decided that to try it out, what they were going to do was they decided they were going to tax carriages. Big mistake for them at the time, because carriages were principally made in two states, known as Pennsylvania and Virginia. And a guy that made carriages in Virginia, whose name was Hilton, decided that he was not going to pay the tax. And he decided he wasn't going to pay the tax because Taylor and Jefferson and others advised him, dude, don't pay the tax. Let's take it to court and let's contest this taxing power. And so who did they hire? And then, of course, the federal government sued. The Washington administration sued. So who did they hire? Who did Hilton hire to represent him in this famous Supreme Court case? John Taylor of Caroline County. And Taylor's argument against the carriage tax is just the most complete, most thorough, and I think the most stinging rebuke to Congress's universal power to tax. And as Taylor demonstrates in that argument that, well, if framers had wanted to give you a ubiquitous universal power, then they wouldn't have put all these conditions on it. And then he lists all the conditions, and it's just a fascinating read. And the thing about it is that Taylor sold copies of it for $1. Imagine that. This was a pretty thick book back then. It cost $1. After he had argued it, he had had somebody transcribe it or write it down in the Supreme Court. Other than those copies, were printed in like 1794, I believe. Other than those copies, there's never been a modern revival or printing of that copy. The only place that you can find a copy of that document is in the records of the Supreme Court, which were not officially kept by the court at that time. So I happened to stumble upon, I got a copy of the original that's just been photocopied so many times, it's almost impossible to read. And we restored this thing from scratch, basically with me dictating the words and then having the transcriptionist write out what I had dictated. And that's the first in a series of pamphlets of Taylor's that have just disappeared into the mist of time.
Now, how can people get their hands on these?
Well, they're at the same place, Founders Trading Post, at MikeChurch.com and at Amazon.com as well. And we even have the Kindle version of Carriage Tax Argument at Amazon. So if you want to download it for your Kindle and read it digitally, you know, you can get the digital copy of it as well. And there's two other pamphlets of Taylor's that we're going to republish. One of them, I think, is probably the one that will interest people the most, is around about the time that John Marshall was inventing the ubiquitous power of the federal government to review the laws of the states, which we're currently possessed of and stuck with, in this McCulloch versus Maryland case. Taylor was sniffing out that that's what Marshall was trying to do before he did it. And Taylor wrote a pamphlet about it, and he wrote his thoughts down to say, okay, let's before you think you can just use the Supreme Court, take and use as the supreme council of all of mankind and invalidate the laws of Greece, New York, for example, let's look at what your power actually is and what it's supposed to be. And that'll be the next one in the Taylor pamphlet that we'll publish. That'll be coming out here in the next couple of weeks, actually. Most of the work on that one's already done.
Well, I think anybody listening to this program who enjoys history will appreciate all of these projects. Certainly, Times That Try Men's Souls is great for the whole family. And this other work by John Taylor, well, again, anyone who is interested in U.S. history will appreciate the significance of what you're doing here. To me, it's wonderful to read contemporaries who were critical of John Marshall, and indeed, in this case, even someone who anticipated some of the evils of John Marshall before he could perpetrate those evils. That makes some good and interesting reading. And it also goes to show that these critiques are not things that you and I thought up 200 years later, but that astute people at the time who did believe in keeping the federal government at bay were well aware of the full nature, the true nature of the tenure of John Marshall as Chief Justice. It's just fantastic. What else do I wonder if you're like me and you've got a list of projects that you say, well, sometime between now and the end of the world, I'm going to get to these. If you've got such a list, can you give us a special sneak preview that you haven't even shared with your own listening audience? Is that asking too much?
No. Well, I'll tell you that the title of the pamphlet, the one we're talking about, Taylor and Marshall, and it's not just Marshall that he goes after. He sees the writing on the wall with this this committee that they're putting together to basically try and figure out, okay, how can we tear up the imports of the South and relieve the exports of the North? The title of the pamphlet is The Spirit of 76. And he meant it as The Spirit of 76, which was, okay, this is the spirit of the American Revolution, and guys, and this is where you're going wrong. This is what's wrong with that. So the pamphlet we were just referring to, I had talked earlier about those the Life of Washington books by Washington Irving, and there's been a couple of attempts in the last 100 years to republish the Life of Washington series. And when Irving wrote it, and he wrote the last page of the last volume 2 days before he died, when Irving wrote that, he wrote it in 7 volumes, and it could take you a year to read. So about 20 years later, one of his, I don't remember if it was his son or a nephew, but they went through and they edited it down and they put it into what's called The Life of Washington, the Student's Edition, and it's only 2 volumes. And we're going to republish, we're about two-thirds of the way through that, republishing the 2-volume set of Washington Irving's amazing story of George Washington and the life of Washington in two volumes. So that one's coming. There's an actual book that was written by a bio of John Taylor, written by a guy named, a historian named Henry Sims. And Sims' copyright expired about 2 years ago, meaning that that work is actually part of the public domain now to be published. We're going to republish that. I'd like to do the bio, the story of John Randolph of Roanoke. Several people have republished that one, but they quit publishing it in the early part of the 20th century. There's a book that I actually found thanks to you, Tom, Edward Payson Powell's on nullification, the history of nullification and secession in the Union of States, which Payson Powell wrote in the 1890s.
Right. Now, he was not a sympathizer, but he's got good information.
Oh, he wasn't a sympathizer, and I think that that's what makes his work great, because
right.
his research, I mean, his writing says that, okay, I can't disprove. he concludes in that work, secession was warranted, and nullification and interposition were also warranted, even though he presents the work of some of the more, I guess you would call them drunk with the fevers of abolitionists at the time, as a counter-argument, that doesn't take away from the great stuff that he discovers in that particular volume. And just one more that we're working on, as is a historian, author friend of mine, Stephen Klugowitz, who is now working at the Imaginative Conservative website. Stephen and I, for about the last year, have been putting together snippets and paragraphs at a time, and then a page, and then a chapter, of a contemporary guide for young men on becoming young gentlemen, because there's no guide like it. And so it's kind of a how-to book on, if you want to learn how to become a gentleman or a chivalrous knight, as they were called in the day, and it brought back the 20th century or 21st century culture and what have you, this is a nice little guidebook to that. And we kind of walk you through the history of who the first gentlemen were, who the first knights were, and what about manners, and where did the manners come from, and why were the manners always tilted towards women? And there's really a great history behind that. We don't have a lot of great books these days or great guides for young men on how they ought to conduct their affairs or how their forefathers used to conduct their affairs, especially when it comes to the fairer sex or the fairer gender. And we're working hard on that book. That book will come out later this summer.
Well, it all sounds great, and I know I have a great many history buffs who listen into this program, and I urge them not only to check out the Founders Trading Post at MikeChurch.com, where they can get all these interesting things, but also, of course, your program on the Patriot Channel on Sirius XM, 6 to 9 a.m., Monday through Friday, on Sirius XM Channel 125, if I'm not mistaken.
That is. Monday through Friday, 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8, unfortunately for me.
Yeah. And me too.
I have to do it.
It means I generally listen in when I have an early flight. I switch it on, I listen to Mike Church, and I say, I'm going to listen to the master at work, a guy who can sit there with a three-hour show to have a full hour with no guest at all and fill that hour effortlessly, whereas when I host the Peter Schiff Show, people think it's effortless, but I am concentrating every ounce of my energy on thinking of stuff to say during every dead moment of that show. So I appreciate the model that you are for me and what I've been able to learn from you over the years. That's all great. And best of luck with all these projects, and thanks for your time today.
Oh, thanks for having me, and I appreciate the kudos, and right back at you in the way that you have handled your exploration of history and liberty and all that stuff. You're a model for the rest of us out here, too, brother. Thank you.
Thanks again, Mike. And that is the program for today. Just a reminder, I'm going to be speaking in Utah tomorrow, but to my knowledge, that event is sold out. Tomorrow would be May 9th. I'm going to be speaking in, again, I keep forgetting, the Dallas event is private, so where else am I speaking? In Boston. I am speaking in Boston at Cheers. How about that? On June 2nd, we got the details on that one, as well as my event June 19th in St. Paul, Minnesota, up at tomwoods.com. My personal site is tomwoods.com with an events page, tomwoods.com/events. I hope to see you guys at one of those. And if you'd like to invite me to speak at TomWoods.com, there is a little invite Tom to speak button, and somebody will be back with you shortly. All right, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
The Tom Woods Show.